Hello and welcome everyone to another podcast by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency Office of Inspector General, also known as the EPA or IG. My name is Becky Klingler, and I'm here with two other people today, Special Agent Clay Brown from the OIG Office of Investigation.
Thanks for having me, Becky.
And Scott Levine from the OIG Office of Counsel.
Great to be here, Becky.
Thanks to both of you for taking the time to talk to me. As you know, Offices of Inspector General, not just the EPA or OIG, but OIGs across the federal government, have been in the news a lot lately. And so I've been thinking about how reporters and the public get the information they want from us. Many people know that one way to get information from the U.S. government, information that has not been made public, is through the Freedom of Information Act, or FOIA for short. You both play key roles in the EPA OIG's FOIA process. And so I've invited you here to share your expertise with me and our listeners. Scott, you are an attorney and the EPA OIG's FOIA officer. Can you start us off today by talking about the FOIA requests you receive? For example, who do you get them from, and what kind of information are requesters typically looking for?
Sure, Becky. Under FOIA, anyone can request information. You don't have to be a reporter or a government worker or have any kind of political connection. In fact, you don't even have to be a U.S. citizen. Anyone can submit a FOIA request. As far as the type of request that I see coming to the EPA OIG, as you know, our office has two main functions. We do audits and evaluations, and we do investigations. Our audits and evaluations focus on improving the efficiency and effectiveness of EPA programs, whereas our investigations cover allegations of criminal activity and serious misconduct involving EPA programs and employees. Now, at the end of most audits and evaluations, we issue a report that talks about our findings and our recommendations, and these reports are publicly available on our website. But not much is published about our investigations. Due to privacy concerns and other statutory obligations, we sometimes can't even acknowledge that there is or has been a particular investigation. Over 75% of FOIA requests that the EPA OIG receives are seeking information about our investigations. And most of these requests are made by reporters or people involved in the investigation itself, like a subject, witness, or people who have been interviewed.
Scott, thank you. Clay, you are the Office of Investigation point of contact for FOIA requests, right?
That's right, Becky.
Can you tell me what that means?
Absolutely. After Scott receives a FOIA request, if it deals with investigations, he'll send me a memo outlining the information I need to provide him, and then I get to work. From Scott's memo, I identify the keywords that I'll use to search anything that makes the request unique so I can find responsive records.
Sorry to interrupt, Clay, but what do you mean by responsive record?
Good question. A responsive record is any document we have that matches the FOIA request. For example, if someone asks for information about case XYZ, all our documents that talk about case XYZ are considered responsive records. A document that only talks about case ABC, however, is not responsive. It is important to note that FOIA does not require that we search and find every possible record. We're only required to do a, quote, reasonable search.
Okay. So how do you find these responsive records? I'm imagining a huge hallway lined with filing cabinets.
I'm sure that's how it used to be done, but thankfully all our records these days are electronic. I have two databases that I search depending on the subject matter in the request. There is a hotline database where I enter information we receive from OIG hotline complaints, and there is an investigation database where we keep all our documents pertaining to open and closed investigations. Also, because I also handle all the hotline complaints that come to the EPOIG, I will search my emails for responsive records since there is often email change associated with the complaints.
Becky, if I could jump in here quickly, I'd like to clarify that even if Clay finds responsive records, it doesn't automatically mean we release them under a FOIA request.
What do you mean?
Well, after Clay sends me the responsive records he's found, the FOIA team takes a hard look at them. Under FOIA, we're allowed to withhold information and documents for 9 specific reasons called FOIA exemptions. Not all of these 9 exemptions usually apply to our records, but there are a few that do apply quite frequently. For example, if there's an open investigation related to the request, we generally can't release anything about that investigation. That's exemption 7A under the FOIA. Another exemption that applies to a lot of our cases is if releasing the information would disclose techniques or procedures used during law enforcement investigations. This is exemption 7E under FOIA. But perhaps the exemption that applies the most to our records are the privacy exemptions, which are exemptions 6 and 7C. We need to protect people named in the investigation, whether they are the subject, the investigators, witnesses, or otherwise involved. The reason this privacy exemption is so important is that we want people to talk freely and openly to our investigators, and people won't do that if they aren't confident their privacy will be protected. So when we do have responsive records that we can release, we thoroughly and carefully examine all of them, and we redact names, titles, anything that could be piecemealed together to potentially identify anyone mentioned in the documents. For this reason, investigative FOIA documents can be heavily redacted and frankly look like Swiss cheese. Our audit-related FOIAs typically are not as heavily redacted.
Scott, how much time does everyone have to identify responsive records, examine them, redact them as necessary, and return them to the person requesting them?
Under FOIA, we have 20 working days to provide the requester a substantive response from the time he or she submits the request. We typically are able to respond within that time frame, but there are times when 20 days just isn't sufficient, and sometimes we have to request an extension. Usually, though, as long as we communicate with the requesters and let them know what difficulties we're having, they're understanding and realize we're doing everything we can to provide them with the information. Many times, requesters narrow their requests, which helps us focus our efforts.
We've talked about the FOIA process in broad strokes, but can you give me the nuts and bolts now? Scott, how does someone submit a FOIA request?
Sure. The first step is to go to a website called FOIA Online and submit the request to the EPA. Here at the OIG, we still take requests that are mailed in the old-fashioned way, and currently someone can email us directly as well, but submitting a FOIA request via FOIA Online is easiest. If you wanted to go specifically to the EPA OIG, you can just indicate that within the FOIA Online form, and EPA will send it over to me.
Okay, so now you have the request in hand. What do you do?
So we'll look at the request and determine which OIG area it goes to, which, as I said before, is more often than not our Office of Investigations. Then, like Clay mentioned, I'll issue a memo to the OIG office that would have the information. That office will conduct a search and return any responsive records to me. Once I see the response, I'll look at who the requester is. If it's the subject of the investigation, we need to get a signed certificate of identity that they are who they say they are. This is to make sure we are protecting the subject's privacy. If there are no responsive records, generally we'll send a letter to the requester saying so. If there's an ongoing investigation, we'll generally send a letter to the requester stating that we can't release any documents for that reason. If there are responsive records, we have two levels of review that each responsive record must go through before it can be released. One person on our FOIA team will process the documents, which means he or she will read the records line by line and redact information that seems to fall under any of the FOIA exemptions. Once the processing is done, someone with signing authority will review the redactions and approve the documents for release. Usually there's some back and forth until both people are satisfied that we're meeting FOIA's requirements, and then we release the documents. Most documents released under FOIA are released within the FOIA Online database so that these records become publicly available and searchable to everyone. The only exception is if the requester is seeking first-party information.
And what happens if the requester doesn't like your response?
Each response includes what's called a FOIA determination letter, which summarizes the status of the request, if there are any exemptions, if there are no responsive records, etc. This letter includes information about the FOIA appeal process. If someone doesn't agree with the redactions, or doesn't think that the records are what they asked for, or believes records exist when we don't find responsive records, then that person has the right to appeal within 90 days of the determination letter issuance. The appeal does come back to our office, but the people who worked on the original request don't handle the appeal. Then, based on the appellate level review, the initial FOIA determination will either be upheld or reversed.
Clay, as someone who searches for responsive record, do you have any tip to help our listeners submit successful FOIA requests? In other words, how can they make sure that their FOIA request will give them the result they want?
Sure, Becky. The more specific and narrow the request is, the easier it is to search our database and find responsive records. FOIA is not meant to be a fishing expedition or needle-in-the-haystack type search. Requests for any and all records are not proper FOIA requests. A request must be specific enough to allow an employee familiar with the topic to locate the record within a reasonable amount of time.
Could you give an example of a request that is too broad and how someone could refine a request so that it's acceptable?
Sure. I recently seen requests asking for all our records about a computer crime. But what does the requester mean by computer crime? Does he want information about investigations of employees who have improperly used their government computers? Or does she want information about computer attacks against the agency? Or is a request asking about stolen government computers? Instead of asking for all records about computer crimes, be specific. If you can, mention the specific document you are looking for. For example, say, I am seeking the report and investigation for case number ABC, or I am seeking the case closing report for the investigations with computer theft in their title between March and October of 2017. These specific requests are reasonable, and the requester always has the option to submit additional FOIA requests if he or she finds anything in those documents that point to other records. For example, if the report and investigation references a specific interview summary, the requester can submit another FOIA request for that interview summary.
Okay, I have two follow-up questions based on what you just said. First, Scott, I think this is a question for you. Wouldn't submitting more than one FOIA request be cost prohibitive?
Actually, Becky, while the law does say that federal agencies can charge a fee for time and duplication costs, most requesters to the EPA OIG don't meet the threshold to collect fees. Submitting a FOIA request is free, and if there will be a charge, FOIA says that federal agencies must provide a written estimate to the requester before proceeding. So even if we were to charge a fee, the requester would have the chance to see how much it would cost and decide how to proceed from there.
Thanks, Scott. Clay, my second question is for you. You said that specifying a certain record or document helps produce successful results. I'm not familiar with investigative documents, and maybe some of our listeners aren't either. Would you be willing to help me create a list of common investigative documents to post along with this podcast? I could also incorporate tips you and Scott mentioned about how to submit FOIA requests and resources for people with more questions.
I'd be happy to help you do that, Becky.
Clay and Scott, thank you so much for joining me today. We are almost out of time, but Scott, do you have any last thoughts?
It was great being here, Becky. FOIA is a valuable tool for our citizens. It provides them with insight into the workings of the government and makes our government more accessible and transparent. The number of FOIA requests we receive is increasing every year. In 2016, the EPA OIG received about 60 FOIA requests. In 2017, we received about 95. And so far in 2018, we've received over 30. I think this increase is partly driven by the fact that people are more knowledgeable about their right to know what their government is doing.
Clay?
Becky, thanks for including me. I agree with Scott. FOIA is an extremely important law because it allows for transparency of information. It's your government and your information.
And with that, I'll say thank you to our listeners for joining us. Just one final note. If you are interested in seeing our tips about FOIA that we mentioned earlier, we will post them on the EPA OIG's website in the same location you access this podcast. Just go to www.epa.gov/OIG and navigate to the podcast page.